It is the Monday morning show, and we are glad because in our studio with us this morning, Meadow Kaufeld. She's the Minnesota and Western Upper Peninsula Regional Biologist for the Ruffed Grouse Society.
What's that acronym?
And the American Woodcock Society.
That's a big acronym.
Which one was that? I don't know.
The regional, say it again, Heidi.
I didn't have an acronym, but she is the regional biologist for the Ruffed Grouse Society, so RGS, is that what you're saying? And
yes.
The American Woodcock Society, AWS.
Wow.
She's the RB for that.
So we've had Meadow on before. So how did this gig happen for you?
That's a complicated question, but I guess the easiest is that I applied and interviewed and
okay.
But there's many years behind it. That's what I meant.
Yeah, you got a history. You're not just gonna take you right away.
No, it's not something that. I mean, it's really a lifetime commitment to chicken-like birds. In fact, I rescued a chicken yesterday.
I saw that. Yes. You were driving on the road and there was a chicken running around?
Yes, I had a trailer in my truck and it was hard to stop. And she just was like standing in the middle of the road. And I pulled over and I walked towards her and was like, chick, 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 chick. And she came running to me. And
and you looked like you were having a good embrace.
Well, I picked her up. She let me pick her up, which is odd. Other than Minnesota chickens seem really friendly for some reason. But
and then it was in the car with you.
Yes, she rode on my lap, and then I put her in Heidi's car seat with Heidi. And then she ended up on the floor, and she left us a present.
And, of course.
And then I had to unhook the trailer and go back and try to find these people that the chicken belonged to. And we never found the folks that she belonged to, but she had been eating vegetation for a while. So, like, her droppings were full of vegetation. There was no corn or seeds.
Only you would know.
Yes, and then I did find a young couple near our house that I could hear their chickens crowing all the time, and sure enough, they had the same breed. They weren't missing a chicken, but they ended up an extra chicken now.
So where did the chicken end up?
She's with Jason and Rachel somewhere down south of Pekegama area.
Do you think that chicken will be accepted? Do you know the species at all?
There's a pecking order. Oh, of course. I know chickens very, very well.
That was so cute. You're holding a chicken in your truck.
Well, I don't know. You know, I just soft spot, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the right thing to do.
Well, so Meadow, thanks for coming in today. Let's talk a little bit about the national hunt that was in Grand Rapids, right?
Yep. This was the 36th annual national hunt. And basically we have 54 teams this year, so two people per team. So 108 hunters came this year and participated. And in addition to those, we have huntsmen that take them out and guide. And they were kind of disappointed this year. The numbers were really low, actually the lowest on record, and certainly didn't reflect that 57% increase in drumming surveys this last spring. And there's a lot of questions as to what's going on or what happened.
So, does that mean something was wrong with that drumming survey? Something was off with that? What does it mean?
Yeah, there was definitely good. Well, I almost would guarantee that there were inconsistencies with the drumming survey. The thing to remember is that drumming surveys are an index, and so there's a lot of variability, everything from weather to observer, time of day, all that stuff that can affect it. And then also just the fact that sometimes you get lucky and hit good weather. So there's a lot of variabilities. It's just an index. But the other thing is I definitely think it was overly optimistic, and then our recruitment was really low this year. It was about half of normal. So something did happen during the breeding survey.
So the recruitment of shooters season. Is what you're talking about? Or
no, recruitment is the addition to the population. The juveniles that live to adult age and you know, basically juveniles that live through the brooding season into the fall and are able to begin dispersing and adding to the population.
So they're down?
Yes.
Okay. Yep.
What about, how's the season been so far now?
You know, the only folks that I really have heard being wildly successful in this area are folks that are driving on ATVs and shooting them off of the trails.
Okay.
But otherwise, you know, the people that hunt them traditionally by going out with a dog or walking or having a really difficult time this year. And the reason why ATV hunters are so successful a lot of times is they cover a lot of miles. And the birds are vulnerable because the leaves come off the trees, they lose that vegetation, and then they're drawn to the trails where there's shorter vegetation, a lot of times clover and things like that that they prefer. And then ATV moves pretty fast, and it doesn't make as much noise as, say, a dog with a beeper and two people walking. So you can roll right up on them really quick, and a lot of times surprise the birds. So
Meta, what's the outlook for the future then? It doesn't sound very promising. If they're down now, can they recover that fast?
Yeah, they are. They have a high reproductive output with the right conditions. And so a hen, especially in the upswing in the years, it may have to have up to 12, 14 eggs. And a lot of times, you know, they can have higher success in rearing those chicks if they do hatch under the right conditions.
What are the right conditions? What are perfect conditions?
Well, just enough moisture to keep things green and the insects going, but certainly not too much moisture, not too cool in this early spring. And then same deal with, we don't have long snaps of cold, wet weather in early summer. The chicks have a tough time thermoregulating on their own until they're larger, so they're dependent upon the female. And then if you have ever been around baby chickens, if they get wet, their little fluff sticks right to their body and they get cold really quickly. And so they're not very well adapted to staying warm in wet, cold conditions.
So how does mom keep them warm? I mean, it seems simple, but I mean, mom doesn't sit on a chick.
She does.
Does she really, yep, after it's born?
It's brooding, yeah.
Okay.
They brood regularly. And if you've ever been around chickens with chicks, they're constantly brooding. And so brooding is basically they elevate their wings and they sit close to the ground and the chicks kind of snuggle up into them. They actually have a brood patch a lot of times, and that's the hens develop a warm pad on their chest, and they either pluck or lose the feathers on their breast, and it becomes like kind of a wrinkly red warm pad that's called a brood patch. And the chicks and the eggs through contact stay warm by touching that, and then also underneath the hen's wings.
How long is the grouse hunting season? When does it start? When does it end?
Oh, man. I never pay attention to the end because I don't typically hunt late season.
But it goes through deer hunting season,
yes,
doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yeah. It goes into December. I want to say it's January 1st, but don't quote me on that.
Okay.
But, yeah, here I am. It's on record. But, no, it starts...
It's still going on right now. That's actually the question.
It is, yes.
Yeah.
It starts mid-September and goes on through deer season into winter.
Okay.
And, again, birds are really vulnerable in the winter because of, you know, it's energetically taxing, and especially if you have a bad winter. So I don't typically hunt them later in the season unless I'm just going out to enjoy a nice day, but not something I heavily target them during that time.
We're talking with Meadow Kaufeld today. She's from the Ruffed Grouse Society and the American Woodcock Society. She's a member of Northern Community Radio. I promised her she would get to gong, and you do.
She does.
That means we
yeah.
had a phone call to 800-662-5799.
This is... Right?
Nobody's told you how to do it, have they? There.
Oh, that was nice. That's a very good AM. Yeah. Very good AM gong.
AM?
Gentle.
Morning.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I can see.
Jar you out of bed.
Later we get more violent. Tom and Tina Karges renewing their membership.
Great. Thank you, guys.
They're no strangers to Northern Community Radio, and they're going to take the State of Wonder books. I think we have
two of those left.
And Where's Your Radio? They have several, and they use their computer, and it's always on Northern Community Radio. So thank you very much for your continued loyal support. We really, really appreciate it.
So I was lucky. You guys didn't get to see this amazing thing during our Galen Lee concert. Sorry, Meadow, I have to talk about your daughter, Heidi Sue, again. But she was in the most amazing... dress with a wrap around it,
yeah.
And she had this beautiful little hairdo, but you know what she was talking about? The grouse she got. And she's how old? Four?
She's four and a half or so.
Wow.
So it was a big year for Heidi.
Yes, she shot her first grouse, and she caught plenty of walleye this summer, and then her dad even let her shoot a raccoon the other day, so they had a nuisance raccoon. And so Yes, very big year for Heidi.
So,
I think every year.
So was the raccoon in season?
Yes.
Okay.
She's four?
Yes.
Don't you have to have like hunter safety when you're like 10?
No, she's, when you're 12, yeah, but her father, he's there with her.
No, I just was wondering, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Shooting a grouse. Was it in the air? Was it on the ground?
No, I'm sure it was on the ground. It took a while for her to figure it out. And so he was holding a 410 shotgun.
Yeah.
Very small shotguns, like shooting a .22.
I was going to say, does it knock her over? Four is not very big.
You know, I wasn't there.
Yeah.
But he told me that one she did get. And she's claimed others that he shot, but she usually eats all of them. She doesn't share, apparently.
So, Meadow, I got to tell you, I've said this before on the radio. The first grouse I ever shot was, I was living in Cohasset, and I was having breakfast, and my dad comes yelling at me, "There's a grouse out there, get your gun." So I have this little 410. It's like held together with literally electrician's tape. And he told me to sneak around the garage because it was sitting in the doghouse.
Oh.
The grouse was sitting right on top of the doghouse. I, you know, lined her up, boom, shot it. It flew off and landed in the picture window and didn't have a single BB in it, but it was dead. That was my first grouse. I can still see it. I must have missed by a mile, but I scared the bejesus out of it and went right in the window. Oh, so there, man. You go.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people, oh, grouse hit my window. I'm like, did you save it? Did you freeze it? Are you going to eat it?
So now you were just in Michigan?
Yes.
What was going on there?
The 11th American Woodcock Symposium. It happens now every 10 to 11 years. And that is basically a get-together of the nations and international. In fact, we had quite a few people from Europe there representing the Eurasian woodcock. And basically get together, share the knowledge that we've accrued over the last couple of years on woodcock management and research, and drink beer and talk about woodcock. And some people even bring their dogs and hunt woodcock in the area.
So tell us, tell us about woodcock. Are they plentiful just like grouse are here in Minnesota or not?
You know, Minnesota is the only state that they're actually doing well to increasing. And elsewhere, especially in the east, they're declining or remaining stable, but declining especially in the east, and that's largely tied to habitat. But woodcock in Minnesota are doing quite well. They had a tougher year this year. If you'll remember, right around fishing openers, when we start to look to ban chicks, well, we got a skiff of snow and the ground froze after a lot of the woodcock had already initiated nests and shown up. And so we had a tough time during the spring when we were banning chicks to find actual broods. And so recruitment, or actually the take or harvest, was down, not necessarily recruitment, but 14% from the previous year. So They didn't have the best year, but they are still holding strong. And then the flight or the migration this fall was kind of off. And I was gone much of the fall, unfortunately, but a lot of folks had a tough time finding those flight birds and high concentrations and real predictable habitat.
You mentioned nesting. Tell us, where does a grouse nest and where does a woodcock nest?
Well, they kind of overlap. And woodcock a lot of times will choose shrubbier areas, patchy or shrubbier areas. And grouse tend to select areas with mid-aged stands. And grouse do prefer to have a guard object at their back. So they'll back up against a tree stump or a brush pile or a clump of brush. Woodcock are kind of like a lot of shorebirds, just wherever they decide.
And it's not really a nest. Do they gather stuff, or is it just they use what's there?
They have a nest bowl or cup. Okay. They don't really create a nest. Woodcock are kind of a depression in the ground. They have four eggs, and the eggs are highly camouflaged, whereas rough grouse do have like a bowl that they, I don't know if they kick out or if they find an area with a depression, and then they have lined a lot of times with leaves. You know, if you've ever watched a chicken, they pull leaves towards them or nesting material towards them, and eventually works at them underneath them. And I do have a hatched out grouse nest that was pretty cool to have. But I don't, woodcock is, you know, those eggs, shells, they are pretty fragile and they disappear really quick.
I was talking with Meadow Caulfield. And also, you were just had a vacation.
Yes.
And it was a fun vacation.
Yeah. I had the women's inter-wing shooting culmination hunts on the 23rd and 24th, and then the 25th, the morning of. So that evening of the 24th, my daughter and I drove down to the cities, and we left the 25th for California. And I had the chance to hunt with my dad and sister for blacktail in the coastal range of California, the Trinity Mountains. And we did really well. My sister and I hunted together most of the time, and I did manage to kill a nice deer, and a very nice deer, but it's a large private ownership, so it's not as big of a deal if it was a public land deer. But
okay.
It was quite a privilege to have the chance to hunt out there and bring home a really nice deer. I was ridiculous coming home. I had two soft Yeti coolers, two large pieces of luggage, and then I had something else I had to carry for my daughter, and I ended up making Heidi pull the little black suitcase at some point. She really thought that was like she needed luggage. She absolutely needed her own luggage, and so at some point I'm like, here, you can take the black one. By the time we got back to Minneapolis, she did not want to carry that or pull that black bag anymore. And I'm like, you have to do it, because I was barely standing as it was with all that weight on me. Oh, yeah, and I had my backpack. So I had a big, heavy backpack, two Yeti coolers full of
bunch
frozen
of meat.
Meat. Yes. And then my giant red rolling
wow.
backpack.
Nice.
My bag was nuts. But some lady is, she's like, I think you need one of those carts. I'm like, I don't think they go where I'm going. And sure enough, they did. So it's just all that backbreaking.
So what does the meat taste like versus a whitetail in Minnesota? Can you tell the difference?
Oh, some people can. I mean, I think it's a little more mild. But the deer I shot was a lot older. And we had actually some steaks out of them last night. And, you know, I will say I'm good at cooking game meat. And so it is
don't
good.
Don't overcook it, right?
Yes. Well, it was a little undercooked last night, but okay. It definitely has to be undercooked in order to be tender. And that deer wasn't the best cuts, but it was really good last night. So
nice.
Happy.
She's going to do it again.
Yep.
Here we go. 800-662-5799. You can also pledge online at kexe.org.
We had a pledge from Wanda and Jerry Hoyam from Cass Lake. They're renewing their membership, and they're taking the Kent Kruger book.
Great.
And they have radios in their living room and vehicles. They have their living room one is a retro Empire model, so I'm not sure. That sounds old. But sounds tubish, but I'm not
it
sure.
It does, yeah. Tubish. Yeah.
Wow.
With the dial and the...
Yeah. Yeah. The light's on all the time.
So, Meadow, deer hunting opener, rifle, firearms opener is this weekend. Big, it's a big deal. The governor's coming to Grand Rapids.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But what are some of the things people, I'm sure people are getting really excited, and that might sometimes make safety fly out of your head if you're excited.
Yes.
What
yeah.
are some of the things people need to remember?
Well, first thing I'll say is everyone needs to remember that baiting is illegal. You go to L&M or whatever, and there's people like with bags of corn and broadheads on top of the bags of corn. It's like, okay, think about that. It's illegal, and it's something that's legal for a reason. You know, we don't want to spread disease, and it's just kind of a law here in Minnesota. Second thing, most important thing that I wanted to mention, though, is that please wear your harness or buy a harness and wear a harness if you're in an elevated stand that's not enclosed. And even if you are in a really tall stand, come up with some sort of safety measure for when you're climbing into your stand. The last thing that we want to know or see is someone falling out of their stand during the best time of the year. This is literally Minnesota's happiest holiday, is deer opener, it seems. And just wear something, because it's not just you, it's your family, it's your neighbors. And it's the first responders, the conservation officers, the deputies, everybody that has to go out and retrieve your body or pull you out of the woods. I'm serious.
No, yeah, I know. It's very. It's, I appreciate
so
that.
So many people are, so many people don't think about that. You think you're invincible or whatever. And I wear a vest, a harness, and I did one time catch myself falling asleep and almost fell out of my stand.
Yep.
And I'm like, I have a climber. I don't usually go over 15 feet, but when you get up there, it's so easy to fall out or make a misslip, or maybe your stand fails. And if you don't have a harness, there's nothing there to catch you. And then you're either dead or you can be paralyzed. And it impacts your community in a big way. And so beyond selfish reasons of taking care of yourself, think about your community and your family and wear some safety harnesses or something to that effect to keep you from falling out of the tree or your elevated stand.
So harness is literally some sort of a strap or device that you hook around a tree so you don't fall a long ways. It catches you right away.
Yeah, and so mine, a lot of them kind of have like seat belts type safety harnesses. So mine's like a vest, and then it's got a 5-point harness that you clip all these safety belts. It even has one in your crotch. So it'll elevate or hold you from multiple points. The old school style is they have this belt that goes around your chest. And so if you fall out of there and you can't get out immediately, a lot of times, yes, people die from compression.
Yeah.
And so they asphyxiate sometimes because there's all that weight holding up underneath your armpits. And not only is it uncomfortable, but it's dangerous. So a lot of people have switched to those vest styles. And this way, mine has a loop that goes above my head. And so I can adjust that and move my climber up a little bit, adjust that. It's an extra step, but it's a professionally made harness, and I can't remember the name of the company that makes them, but they have a really good harness for relatively inexpensive, and they're nice, because the way this one works is that it goes out over your hunting gear, and I can pop the, I usually wear bibs, so I put it on under the bibs, and I put my parka over that, and bring the loop, attach it to the tree above my head.
Yeah.
So it does limit some movement, but as far as I'm concerned, yes, it's a safety thing. And
it's so easy on a warm day. You're sitting up in that stand, yep. And it's quiet, and yep. You hear the birds, and they kind of put you to sleep, and all of a sudden, half the day's gone.
So it sounds like don't spend your money on bags of corn, because that is illegal.
Yes.
Spend your money on a harness.
Yes, buy a harness, and, you know, I know plenty of law enforcement and first responders, and it affects them. It's a sad thing for those people, too, when things happen. And I hate the thought that they have to go out and recover people that maybe are being careless or not thinking about anyone but themselves, I guess, is the best way to put it.
So you got to like a little snow on the ground for the opener.
Yes.
That doesn't happen in a while.
It hasn't happened in a while. And one of the things about the snow on the ground obviously increases visibility for the deer hunters. And so usually it aids in success. We'll see if it holds through the weekend.
Yeah.
Meadow Kaufeld, our guest this morning from the Ruffed Grouse Society, the American Woodcock Society. It is our membership drive. Come up in a few moments. It'll be Pat Miller bringing us music on the river. We're asking for you to support Northern Community Radio, where we talk about hunting. We tell you, Meadow especially is forthright about what you should be doing out there. I appreciate that. Why are you a member, Meadow?
Well, I was thinking about this morning. Obviously, I love the fact that you guys, especially when you have, was it Aaron Brown? They see the Republican. Yep. And so when you guys have both parties.
Chuck Marone is. Aaron will be upset. Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
No, that's okay.
I was trying to think. He was on yesterday, and he had a very important message. But anyways, I like the fact that you guys feature both parties.
Right.
And for the most part, you guys are unbiased. And, you know, everyone's biased basically one way or another. But for the most part, you guys are unbiased. You cover things like hunting and fishing and natural resource extraction, things like that. really, it's kind of neat because I come from California. Our public radio stations are very different than you guys. And so it's kind of...
Not a lot of hunting conversations?
No, no. It's not a very friendly environment for hunting and fishing. But the other thing is I kind of think of you guys as necessary. For me, now it's like coffee. You know, and if you think about it, what you spend on coffee every day is, you know, makes KXE look really cheap when it comes to it. And for me, it's like KXE is what I listen to all day because of the varied music, the news. You guys, you know, also you guys are fun to listen to. You guys are characters and there's some interaction. Now I know you guys a little bit. I just kind of chuckle like, oh boy, I can see what Heidi's doing right now. You know, she's rolling her eyes at John again.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, there's a lot of reasons. But for me, I've come to the point to realize it's kind of like coffee. I need you guys in the morning. And he was saying something to the effect of when you watch general media, national media, it makes the world seem so scary. And even I catch myself being afraid. It's like, man, why is this happening? Why has the world really changed this much? Are there always all these crazy people always been there? Or is it just that they're more publicized? And then it's nice to listen to you guys because it's community. It's the small scale. It's the world isn't scary. We're Grand Rapids, Minnesota. You know, there's bad things that happen here, but it's not nearly as much as you might think by reading national media.
But there's a balance and it's healthy.
Yes. It is. You guys have the right news, but you're also not focused on that as the primary issues in the world or the primary part of the world. There's more to community.
Wow. Thanks a lot, Meadow. I'm going to start weeping. Give us a call. If Northern Community Radio is more important than coffee or equally important as coffee, give us a call, 800-662-5799. Become a member.